Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op Online Radio Network, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. I'm your host, Scott Patton, and joining us is the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. Hi, Martin. How are you doing today?
Thank you for asking. I'm actually fine. Hope you are also.
I am fine, but you know, okay. There's a lot of people in the world that aren't fine.
That is the scary thing. I watch the TV news. I have made a habit of wanting to know what's going on around the planet. I'm not really sure that the TV news is actually the best way to get me knowing what's on the planet, because after all, the editor gets to choose what he wants me to see about the planet. So,
well, and in a world of 7 billion plus people, there's an awful lot of things going on. And it's, you know, what do you pick and choose? And how good an overview is that actually of what's going on?
Precisely. That's the big question. How do they filter? I was thinking about this new technology that Google and Facebook are implementing, which is that they present to you and advertising or other information based on what they think you like. Like, for instance, if you visit a couple of sites that are liberal or Democrat in nature, from that point forward, they will never present you with sites that express the Republican or conservative point of view.
Hmm.
So all of a sudden you shut out.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Huh.
And so it's like you could be living in a world that's completely separate or insular from what's really going on. Like the other day I dialed into Fox News and all the commentators were just going off in this fairly monochromatic slant on things, which had a very strong anything that a Democrat or a liberal could do is just wrong.
Oh.
Wrong. Just wrong. It's just nothing they can possibly do could be even helpful.
By definition, if you're a liberal, what you said is wrong.
Yes. Yeah. There's no way that anything that you can propose is any good. We need to shut it down. Just point to illustrate, right? We have this Obamacare piece of news in front of us lately, and then we have it sort of approved and sort of going to get implemented, and do we quite understand what's in it? And then this guy, Romney, who's the candidate for the other side, he says, never mind the thing that I implemented in Massachusetts, the healthcare program, which is darn close to what the Obamacare is. And he says, the first thing I'm going to do is when we get to Washington is we're going to repeal Obamacare. And he says it like he was ideologically on the high horse, and he's so convinced that that's what he needs to do.
Wow.
And yet, I saw news clips of him talking 3 and 4 years ago when he was explaining what he did and how he did and how he justified it and what he thought it does for people. And it's just totally Obamacare. And then I'm watching a commentator who has the Republican flag or lapel pin, and she says, oh, that's totally different. It's nothing like, there's no similarity.
Hello.
Yeah, hello. Come on, people. Let's get together. But no, that's not what we've got. So what I'm seeing is that this separation, this polarization of things, and it's really making me unhappy, because we're limiting discourse and discussion, and instead we just have two roosters on two ends of the same manure pile screaming at each other, wanting to have a cockfight.
Right.
And then you multiply that by 300 million.
And if nobody can kind of agree, because we've already decided we're not going to agree on anything, then what happens is the population continues to get worse, get or not get worse, get older, and their health continues to get worse, and now we've just got a bigger problem.
Right. Well, so how about the merits of health insurance? Right. Let's just try and step back from the rhetoric and just think for a moment. Does it make sense to have insurance? Well, there's the libertarian view that says insurance is bad because it promotes bad behavior. And I'm actually on board with that. Like, for instance, if you think about it, why do we have car insurance?
So and when you have an accident,
You're covered.
You're covered.
Right. So you can afford to go get your car fixed and get back on the road. But the truth is that we have car insurance so that the bad drivers that cause accidents are able to continue to drive. Because careful drivers and polite drivers don't cause accidents. Like, if you knew that there's no coverage, would you look twice before you push into the intersection?
I think we would be a lot more careful, for sure.
And more polite. Or for instance, where there are no stop signs on highways, there are fewer accidents as opposed to when there are stop signs. Because people who think that the other party is going to stop don't expect a problem.
Right.
So they're just going merrily through. Well, the other party didn't respect the stop sign. Smack, we have a problem.
You remind me of the old joke. This guy gets into a foreign country, and I'm going to make it politically correct. I'm not going to name the country. And he gets in a taxi, and he says, "Where do you want to go, sir?" And he tells him the hotel, and the guy takes off, come up to a red light, goes right through it like it wasn't there. And he freaks out. He says, "That was a red light." He went, "No worries, sir." And then there's another red light, goes right through it, freaks out the passenger. "Don't worry, sir. This is, who taught you to drive?" "My brother, sir. And he's a very good driver. And so you don't have to worry. I never have accidents." And he's driving along, and there's a green light. And he screeches to a stop. And the passenger says, "Why did you stop? It's a green light." "Oh, sir, my brother, he's around here somewhere."
Yes. Okay, so let's extrapolate that into healthcare. When we have insurance, and I've heard it on the news, the guy, I think it was on CNN, and the guy says, "Let me have another drink. I may need a liver transplant, and I'm covered."
Right. Wonderful.
As if getting a new liver was what you really needed or desired. But that's precisely the kind of stupidity that having insurance promotes. It has you believe that somebody's going to save you.
So I don't have to take responsibility for myself.
Right. Yeah. That is exactly the point that insurance brings into people's behavior.
Yeah, I know if I have a heart attack, I can go, they'll take me to the hospital, and hopefully I'll be saved.
Well, that one is a bad lottery, because 50% of population, maybe 60%, but let's just say half of North American population dies of heart disease, and half of them find out that they had a problem by having a massive heart attack that kills them on the spot.
So here, that's actually kind of an interesting perspective, right? So you have this fact, 25% of the people that die of a heart attack, the first symptom they have is the heart attack that kills them.
Yes.
So there's no insurance that's going to save you from that one,
But the only preventive behavior would have eliminated that.
Yeah, but we don't pay attention to it.
Right.
I mean, that's not because it's not me, right? It's not me. Yeah. It was that guy over there that had the heart attack. Yeah. I'm one of the three that are good.
Yeah. So let's focus on why.
Well, yeah, I'm curious about that. I'm curious to know what you say, because it's like, hey, you won't know you have a heart problem until you die of it.
Okay.
So why don't
let's
I do
talk
something
about it? Let's talk about the message. Who would be interested in teaching people or sharing with people the information that will prolong their lives, that will keep them alive? Who's got the economic interest to do that? That's right. Exactly.
Give me a minute. Now, give me a minute.
No, it's not coming,
I'm sure
baby.
I can come up with someone. My mom, no. My dad.
Yeah, but they don't know. If your mom and dad don't know, how could they have taught you?
No, they would be interested in me prolonging my life.
Oh, sure. But they don't know. They don't know how.
Okay, you know, all right. Okay, yeah, you're right. So, okay, it's not them.
Right. Okay, school. School should have taught you. There should be lifestyle as one of the major subjects. I mean, there should be balancing your checkbook, balancing your bank account, learning how to type fast enough on a tiny keyboard, and how to prevent heart attack, kind of.
Did you ever watch Mayberry or Matlock?
No, sorry, before my day.
I did. I loved it. And Andy Griffiths was a star in both of them.
I
thought he was magnificent. He died this week.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
And I just
heart disease.
A heart attack is what is on his death certificate.
Oh, yeah, totally. But he was old, right? He was 84 or 86, some number like that.
Yeah, 84. So.
Well, wow. Anyway, he might have lived a lot longer, but he ran out of the cardiovascular capacity. So let's go back to who is interested in making you a long living, productive member of the society. Okay, let's do it differently. If you are a rancher and you have a herd of cows, a herd of cattle, you know, somewhere out on the pasture, and you're raising them to turn them into cattle that you sell off at an auction a year or a year and a half later after you've raised them. Do you look after the cattle? Like, do you try and prevent them from falling into holes dug by gophers? Or do you try and keep the coyotes away or wolves away? Do you try to keep them from getting tangled in brambles? Stuff like that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely you do. Because why? Because they are your asset. They are your living asset. You need to take care of it and make sure that this thing survives long enough to harvest. So who are we an asset of? Who's our rancher?
I would say the government.
Yep, that's right. We. We the nation, right? We the people. We, the people for whom the Declaration of Independence was signed long ago, practically with blood on paper. Well, apparently, the folks that we have elected to take care of our affairs are not doing their job well, because they are not keeping our welfare at the forefront of their mind. I mean, for me to be the most productive cow or cattle, I need to be healthy and I need to be kept away from danger and I need to be protected from predators. They're not doing it. Now, what would that look like in healthcare?
Well, it would look like this is what you need to do in order to keep your body performing at its best.
Right. And if somehow something didn't go right, you would want to fix it at the earliest possible opportunity. You wouldn't want it to fester, right? Like you wouldn't want a small thing to go undetected and unchecked until it was too late and became a large problem that you had to fix using some kind of heroic measures. Let's go back to the heart disease, okay? So the 25% of population that dies of heart disease in a single event, they're gone. But the other 25%, they are now on a watch list. They have perhaps a angioplasty operation, which means that they stick little vein expanders so the blood can flow, or they'll do a bypass surgery on you. The bypass essentially will take some veins or arteries from somewhere else in the body, like the leg or some or belly, I don't know where they take them, and graft them into the heart so that the clogged arteries are replaced by freshly opened functioning arteries. And that operation sets you or whoever covers it back about $30,000 or $40,000 or maybe $50,000. Okay, so what's the probability that that will happen to a person? About 1 in 2?
Right.
Okay, so how many of these operations are we doing? Lots, right? It cost $50,000. Now, if I could prevent this for about, say, $45, $50 a month using a enzyme product, how many months coverage would that be before I need the operation? $50,000.
1,000.
Yeah, that's it. That's about 83 years, right?
Yeah, I guess so, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, 83 and a bit. How do you like that math?
Does it mean a little bit of preventativeness, and maybe you can miss something that you don't want to experience?
Does it mean that if you would do a stress test on every 40-year-old and find out if their heart is working well and if their arteries are starting to clog, and you would advise them on nutrition and make sure that things are not getting worse, and you would put them on the supplement that's going to prevent all of this? Would that be a way more affordable system than the, well, let's wait until it breaks and then let's see if we can bring it together using heroic, expensive measures?
Well, isn't it always better to have the big emergency and save the day than it is to not have emergencies and it just kind of happens?
Oh, yeah, of course. Irony.
Who's going to watch that TV show? Lived happily ever after. No, we want to have excitement and drama, don't we?
Well, apparently, because it's the most popular modality. But who wants it on themselves? Anyway, so when I think about the Obamacare as I know it now, to me it's sort of like the debate whether we should penalize the people who will not pay for it or don't want it, or whether we should include the hip replacement only after X or after Y, or whether there needs to be a waiting time of less than 6 weeks for such and such scan or such and such measure or operation. To me, that's just like moving chess pieces on a chessboard that's sitting on a table, that's sitting on a deck of a ship that's heading straight for the iceberg.
Yeah.
I have no other means of describing that.
Yeah, just heading for a massive catastrophe, because as the population gets older, I mean, we're talking about it's some outrageous thing, like a heart attack every minute.
Oh, sure. Oh, it's massive. Oh, the numbers are staggering. But, you know, contemplate a hip replacement. I've had that in our family here. my wife's sister had an accident and had to have a hip replacement because it just all broke to pieces, shattered. There actually was nothing. If she didn't have that, she'd be in terrible shape. But anyway, she ended up with one of those that are metal on metal, and stainless steel, which is nickel and iron and some vanadium, are actually causing teeny bits of this metal to wear and enter her body.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh. So this is heavy metal coming into the body, into the circulation. It's causing all kinds of problems. So number one, it's wearing. It's breaking down. Number two, it's causing massive immunological problems. Now, of course, you can imagine the operation and how traumatic it is. I mean, watch the person slice out the hip, rip it apart, chisel out the top of the femur, and then replace it with this metallic device, prosthesis. What's this called? Prosthesis in its place. Or do a knee replacement, right? Another popular thing that other people have. I've talked to so many people who have had knee replacements, and they say, well, you know, life before the operation was horrible. We were talking to the surgeon that was preparing the person for what's going to happen, and surgeon says, you know, the post-operative discomforts that these people experience are very minor to the pre-operative pain that they have experienced. So even though it's a recovery from a major operation, it's nothing in comparison to the pain they've suffered.
Uh-huh.
Well, why are we not working on preventing the wearing out of the joints in the first place?
Let me guess. That's just all you got to do is eat properly and don't do stupid things.
There's some nutritional components indeed, and it's the pH of the lymphatic system management. It's the mild form of exercise and the intelligent eating that's matched to your metabolic type.
Well, I have to tell you that when I was 20, I had massive pains in my knees.
All right.
I ran a 6-minute mile. And I played squash and tennis, which was a lot of stop and starts. And even though in squash, half the time the way I stopped quickly was by running into a wall, many more times the way I stopped quickly was just putting on the brakes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made an appointment to see my doctor, and I went in to see him because it was like I could not squat down and get up without massive, like it was just too painful.
Yes.
I'm 20.
Yes.
So I went in, and he said, you made your appointment. He says, how does it feel today? And I says, it feels fine. And he says, you made your appointment 2 weeks ago, right? And I go, yep. Took you 2 weeks to get in to see me, right? Yep. In the 2 weeks, did you do any running or playing squash or any of those other things that you do all the time? I said, no, because my legs were really sore. He says, exactly. He says, your legs have recovered. Well, I didn't really say recovered. He said, I have the symptoms of a knee disorder, I'm not sure 100% because it was 30 years ago, what he said, without actually having it, which is kind of funny when you think about it.
So you have a symptom of a problem that you are not having.
Yeah. You don't have the problem, but you have the symptom of the problem. And he said, so my advice is stop playing squash and don't run. Your knees will last the longer and you have no pain.
And here you are, so you stopped running
exactly
around.
Exactly what I did. I still play a little tennis, but I walk and hike. I don't run, and I haven't had anything like it, you know,
right.
Since.
And fortunately, you didn't gain a lot of weight and all of that, right?
No, that's right. I managed to kind of keep my weight within 10 or 20 pounds of what it was. So I haven't put on massive amounts of weight or stress on my body that way.
Yeah.
But, I thought about this because I said, I can tell when I'm running, I am putting a lot of stress on a lot of different parts of my body that not in a good way, right? It's pounding and I just know things are grinding and everything else. And I have friends now who have gone for hip replacements, knee replacements because they wore out. They thought, oh yeah, it'll last forever. Well, Not if you smoke, drink hard, stay up late, and you just abuse your body. That's not going to be the case, right?
Right. So there we have it. So prevention, right? What we're watching is people are thinking as if they were going to live forever and as if they would never wear out, and nobody's teaching them what's going to happen. And I don't know if the 20-year-olds don't want to hear, but if we made it a compulsory part of the curriculum and we bring examples of worn out people to show them what it looks like, and maybe we would give them some injection of painful things to show them what it feels like to be 80-year-old if you don't do it right.
I think, Martin, what's required is a massive change in societal expectations. I'm not sure how it would come about, but as you were talking, you reminded me of MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Well, yes. I can remember when go over to Joe's place, have a few beer, maybe six, didn't matter. It was, 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. Hey, Joe, see you later. You sure it's safe to drive? Scott, oh, yeah, no problem. I can drive and get home, And I can actually remember doing that and driving like 15 miles an hour to get home, because at least I knew at 15 miles an hour and there was no cars on the street, I wasn't going to run into anything, or I had enough time to swerve because my reaction, blah, blah, blah.
So you just said the critical piece. There were no cars on the street.
Yeah.
And that is the point. With certain traffic density, you can no longer be not alert or less than perfect or whatever.
Yeah.
Because
there's 10 times more people on the road now than when I was on the
road. Yeah, you can keep it between the lines, but you can't negotiate the stop signs because your reaction is too slow.
Yeah, or somebody coming out unexpectedly, right?
Right, yeah.
I can negotiate the lines. I can even do the stop sign. But if the guy in front of me sees a cat running in front of him and he puts on his brakes, even though I'm way behind where I would normally be safe to stop, I wouldn't be able to stop.
All right, so let's try this. So what are the equivalent of increased traffic as it relates to our health? Oh, no, let's not torture it. I would say this. It's the intensity of the industrial lifestyles, or the Western civilized urban lifestyles,
because rushing around.
Yeah, number one, the level of stress is up dramatically. Number two, the level of inhaled and ingested toxins is up dramatically, like exponentially greater and growing. And the third thing that's in there is time. Because we used to get it all in within 60 years and then die. In fact,
I think time is a really important one too. Like it used to be, someone stayed home and cooked dinner and looked after the house all day. So when the person that was working came home, usually a woman stayed home and the guy went to work. But they come home, there's this meal that's been prepared, and it's usually got some vegetables in it, and it's not microwaved, and there's probably
all
salad and that sort of stuff. Whereas now it's like, I'll stop at McDonald's on the way and pick up something, and because I'm late and blah, 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 right?
It was served to you in a 900-square-foot two-bedroom bungalow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, nobody wants 900-square-foot two-bedroom bungalows now.
No, that's right.
So just because you have now graduated into a 3,000 square foot, three level split with two car garage and two an SUV and something else in it, right? I mean, we have added to the lifestyle, but the price was the lifestyle.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's just focus on the health. So what I'm seeing, or what I would like to say, is that the discussion about the insurance, the health insurance, should not be driven and directed by the vested financial interests. And these interests are the insurance companies, the pharma companies, the chemical industries, and the medical association.
So that actually brings us to the flip side of the coin, because you asked originally, who is it that's that.
Who's the farmer?
Who's the farmer? And the other side of it is well, who is it that benefits when, the farmer is not taking very good care of the sheep, right?
Right. Well, who are the wolves and coyotes and parasites and whatever else there?
Yeah. And we have a lot of that, where there's a lot of people that get very, very wealthy because, every 30 seconds somebody has a heart attack.
That's right.
So they don't really want to change it.
So the discussion has been taken over by the lobbyists that are paid for by the vested interests, and the lobbyists are now talking to the what shall we call them, the political deciders, the decision makers, who are being influenced by these lobbyists. Did you know that for every one of the 535 people in Washington that are running the country, there are 28 lobbyists that are registered, and 14 of those 28 are from the health industry?
No.
Well, I'm here to tell you. That's the number.
Wow.
14 people on a fat payroll for every guy that's in the decision process are there. And they're helping to fund the reelection, and that congressman or senator dare not make a decision that his name is on that does not support his sponsors.
Yeah, because otherwise they'll put the money somewhere else and he won't get reelected. And
that's that.
And that's that.
So anyway, the point being is that we see all this voice about it's such a bad idea to have a single-payer system. By single-payer, we mean the government. In other words, the farmer.
Yep.
I mean, wouldn't the farmer be the one who wants to put it all under one roof and just say, hey, let's just make the best health for the flock?
Right. So, and what are the requirements of that?
Well, it's easy. The government simply says all the employers are free of the burden of the health care. Right? Like this is just a sidebar, but a gigantic issue for American business. Its lack of competitiveness is that every employer has to pay that health insurance bundle.
Right.
One of the most ineffective and inefficient health insurance, health care industries is being paid for by the employers who are essentially forced to purchase that. And now this new regulation puts another 40 or so million people into the same system. So I think if I really put it flat on, remember the Titanic that's heading straight for the iceberg?
Yep.
We just gave it more power. We had 250 million people in the system. Now we've added the last 50 million in. So we just increased the volume of dollars that are flying into the system by this much more. And the way we're going to raise these dollars are taxes, penalties, and employer forced benefits.
So in other words, going entirely the wrong direction.
I would say so. And then the second issue that's the wrong direction issue is that the patient does not decide what he wants done. He has no say in it, whether it's good or bad or otherwise. And I myself am exactly the example of what happens when you have insurance. You know, when I was 25, I had my first health insurance. The first thing I did is I went to the dentist and said, check me out. And dentist saw, oh, he's got his insurance. He sold me on doing 12 amalgam fillings.
Wow.
Here's the weirdest thing. Because I needed all 12. Here's the interesting part. Out of the 30 teeth that I have, 12 got fillings. The other, 18 didn't. In all these years since that time, none of the teeth that were not paved with mercury needed any work. Anyway, instead I got really sick from all that mercury, and that's another story. But the point is this. I wasn't going for what's necessary or what's appropriate, but what is covered. I did not care one bit what it cost. It was covered.
Yeah, so you never thought about it at all.
No, I didn't have to pay. But here's what I propose. If we introduce emergency insurance, like, what shall we call it? Catastrophic event insurance. And we put in a very large deductible, something like 10 or 15, even 15, but let's just start at 10% of your annual income. So let's just say your annual income is 50 grand. 5 grand is your personal limit. So up to 5 grand a year, whatever you spend on healthcare is out of your pocket. We could make it more palatable by making it tax deductible. But that's it. You decide how you spend it.
Right.
And we've got you covered for major events. Like if you break a leg or stuff like that, or worse, if you have cancer or something major that's going to cost big bucks, we'll cover you. But the first 5 grand is out of your pocket. Now, how will you behave when this is going on?
Right.
You will definitely think through your strategy, short-term and long-term. Oh, and you know what's interesting? All the claims that the insurance companies are processing, how many of them are in the $5,000 plus insurance claims?
I would say probably most of them.
No, the opposite. Most claims are for small operations. One prescription, one visit at a doctor, one simple lab test. You know, $200 here, $300 there.
Sorry, I was just thinking of the person that dies of a heart attack every minute.
Well, yeah, those we have. Those are the massive. But in a large scale, society scale, those are very few claims.
Right, because there's hundreds of thousands of doctors that see thousands of patients.
Every day with pissy little things like my child's nose is running.
Yeah.
Or I have this pain in the knee. Right. Well, yeah, you'd go to the doctor. You'd go to the doctor like you go to the plumber. Because, you know, if you neglect it, if you neglect your toilet and don't deal with the problem, you know, when next time you flush and you're going to have the sewer floating down your basement, you're going to think again.
Right.
About not going to the plumber soon enough. Well, same goes with the doctor. You'll go to the doctor because you need it. But you will be going to the doctor with, doctor, how can we fix this? And how can we fix this so it does not happen again?
Yeah.
Anyway, there
That's
you have
the key.
It.
So how if do you I do sound, it so it doesn't – but you know what? The other part of it is the doctors don't know.
Well, because – Because
they're not
they
set
look
up
at it
for
this way,
preventing
anything.
They're
trained to see a symptom and deal with the symptom and suppress the symptom. So, listen, if I sound like a communist to you,
well, it's kind of hard to say you sound like a communist when you're telling everybody they should pay for their own health insurance.
Well, yeah, I'm sounding more like a libertarian. But the point is this: the universal coverage is something I strongly advocate. But here's the critical point. It's not that you have a coverage, but what you have covered. Because if you do more of the stupid things, you just end up with more problems.
Yes.
So covering stupid treatment is just wasting money and wasting the resource, wasting the assets. And it's just a racket that hides the truth from people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my take on health insurance.
Well, there you go. So if you could sum it up, Mr. Obama, the President Obama, would like to know exactly what he should do, Martin, in like two sentences, what would you say?
Single-payer insurance, high deductible, and completely take the employers out of the delivery system, completely take the insurance companies out of the graft, completely make the consumer responsible for which health policy or practices they want to do. Give it to the consumer. Consumer will decide what's best for him. He will self-educate. He will teach himself. He will talk to his neighbors. They will get to the bottom of what works and what doesn't.
Great. So, of course, and you advocate preventing all of these things, which are pretty much all preventable through proper nutrition, rest, lifestyle, correct?
The chronic problems are. I would think that we would still have emergency rooms that are going to stitch us back together when we smash up in a car accident, but we would have way fewer heart attacks coming to these emergency rooms.
Right. So we have two types of health care, really. We have the catastrophic one, the building falls down, people are hurt, there's a fire, your car wrapped around a telephone pole, fell off of a branch in a tree, broke my leg, those sort of things. And then we have the cancer, heart disease, heart attacks, diabetes, obesity, which are all really
The chronic
chronic.
lifestyle caused diseases, yeah.
Yeah. And those ones, of course, are very preventable.
Yes.
So
And
if
that
somebody wanted to
healthcare.
know more about what they could do to look after their own health, particularly when we're talking about preventable chronic lifestyle diseases as opposed to breaking your arm doing something, what should they do?
Well, there's lots of information on our website, life-enthusiast.com. And if the answer is not readily obvious, give us a call, 1-866-543-3388. We're there, and we are restoring vitality to you and to the planet.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Cheers.